Hi, and welcome to the Newbery Chronicles. This is a podcast where two people read through every Newbery medal-winning book, and then we talk about it. I'm Michael.
And I'm Rebecca.
And this time we're talking about the 2013 Newbery medal winner, The One and Only Ivan, by the one and only Catherine Applegate. First, a few things. First of all, Rebecca, our beloved my beloved co-host, is under the weather, has been for quite some time.
Yes.
That was a very convincing, very real cough. And she may have some other very real coughs throughout the course of this episode. And if you noticed her being a little huskier than normal in the voice, no, she has not picked up a chain-smoking habit that we're willing to disclose.
I just have a cold.
She just has a cold.
And we would have recorded this a while ago because we've both been done with this book for quite some time. But I would get into a coughing fit about this time every evening. So.
And also you lost your voice.
That too. So.
But it's back. The coughing is relatively minimal.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we apologize in advance for any sickness-related diseases. Or not diseases, sickness-related interruptions. For now, let's talk about...
I need you to start with what you're reading, because I'm having some technical difficulties.
Oh, okay. So, I'll go ahead and talk about what I've been reading. So, since the last podcast, I've read 3 books. I'm almost done with the 4th, but I'm going to let that one slide for now. We'll push that to the other episode. What I've been reading, first, I read Wide Sargasso Sea by Jean Rhys, I think is how you pronounce that author's name. This is a book that is basically like a post-colonialist companion to Jane Eyre, which is the kind of famous Charlotte Bronte, or is it Emily Bronte? It's Charlotte.
Jane Eyre is Charlotte.
Jane Eyre. So in Jane Eyre...
Remember, because Emily did not write Eyre, the E's do not match. Oh, that's man. How you remember.
Okay.
That's how I remember.
At any rate, if you've read Jane Eyre, that 19th century gothic novel, you probably remember that at one point there's revealed to be... So spoilers if you've not read this 200-year-old book. There's revealed to be a crazy wife living in the attic of this man Rochester's house. And there's a kind of throwaway line about how Rochester married her in the West Indies or something like that. And so what this book is a kind of, it doesn't even tell Jane Eyre from Bertha, the crazy wife's point of view. It basically is telling her backstory and like kind of positioning her within the, what was happening in the middle of the mid 19th century in Jamaica. So there's a lot of complicated racial dynamics. There's a lot of complicated gender dynamics. And this is a very short book, but it is also very complicated. You get some from Rochester's point of view. You get some from Bertha's point of view, who is actually named Antoinette, and Bertha is just the name that Rochester gives her to control her. But you also get... a lot of characters who are black. Bertha is not black, but Jamaica very recently had like abolished the slave trade, or not just the slave trade, slavery in general. And so you have like these black recently freed characters who are in tension with Antoinette's family, who is white and had some of them as slaves at some point. I don't feel like I know a lot about Jamaican history, and some of the nuances I'm sure were lost on me, but really good, interesting book. I also read this book called God's Man, a novel in woodcuts by Lind Ward. And so this is a book from like the 1920s, I want to say. It's basically like a precursor to the graphic novel. So like these wordless novels became kind of popular for, especially in continental Europe, but also in America. Lind Ward is an American. And so it's basically a graphic novel before there were, like, graphic novels. This one is kind of like a Faust tale where this guy, like, makes a bargain and anyway, like, it's whatever. Like, you've seen, you know, you make a deal with the devil, eventually the devil comes back, and, you know, etc. The story is just okay. The woodcuts are very cool, though. They look like, you know, if you've ever seen woodcuts, the big, you know, stark kind of contrast between the black and whites and the hatching and cross-hatching and things like that. It looked very cool. It was online for free. It had,
I was about to say, how was this book on your radar?
It had just entered the public domain, let's see, was it this year? I saw it on a list of public domain books, and I was like, what is this book? And this had just entered the public domain.
I'm always intrigued by how you find your books.
Or if it wasn't this book that was in the public domain, it was another wordless novel, and then I saw that this was an American wordless novel. Whatever the case, I found it through some public domain search. Because, you know, in January every year, new books enter the public domain. It's the best day of the year. anyway, the third book that I read, speaking of graphic novels, is called Blankets by Craig Thompson. And this is a graphic novel. It's a modern graphic novel. It's from, like, 2005, I want to say. I read it because the school district where I teach recently responded to fairly, like, a restrictive state law about which books can be in school libraries, and our school library or our district library department decided to remove 48 novels or 48 texts, excuse me. They're not all novels. They decided to remove 48 texts from circulation in the Knox County Schools library system, and Blankets was one of them, and I had never heard of it. But it seemed interesting to me. So it's basically about this kid growing up in, like, the 90s. It seems fairly autobiographical of the author, Craig Thompson. But he's, like, growing up in the rural Midwest. I can't remember what state. Maybe it's Wisconsin, or maybe it's Minnesota. It's one of those two. His family is fairly devoutly Christian and evangelical. And at one point he goes off to a church camp and meets this girl there. He's a teenager at this point, by the way. They start kind of like they strike up like a friendship that eventually, like, becomes this kind of, like, ambiguous, like, romantic sort of thing. The bulk of the novel is the main character goes and visits the girl because she, of course, lives somewhere else. She lives like a state over, you know, and they both had gone to the same camp where they met. But there's a lot of flashbacks as well to this kid's childhood, and, like, the kind of, like, you know, theological wrestlings that this kid has. Like, he's really interested in, like, pursuing ministry, but is also really interested in art. Also, like, a lot of, like, angst about, like, his relationship with his family. You know, his dad seems, like, borderline abusive and stuff. This character has been abused by, like, a babysitter in the past that he's, like, repressed. It's not always that heavy, and a lot of times it's very lovely and light. But ultimately, I thought it was really good, poignant, I wish it was not banned by my school system. The state law specifies that you cannot have nudity in a work, and there's this one part where he's, like, drawing things, and he draws, like, a nude, woman, and therefore we can't have it in the school library. Despite it being a cartoon nude person, whatever. What'd you read, Rebecca?
I only finished two books since the last time we did the podcast. I read The Nightingale by Kristen Hanna. The Nightingale is set, and it's a historical fiction novel. If you know Kristen Hanna, you know that's her specialty. It is a novel that is set in World War II in France, and really, like, chronicles the Nazis overtaking France and what that looks like, how it starts out gradually, what their response is to the citizens there, what their response is to Jews there and homosexuals and communists and every other group that the Nazis decided were less than themselves. And this story mainly focuses on the journey of these two sisters who are both French citizens. The younger one is kind of rebellious. She really wants to stand up to the Nazis. She is very fiery, gets herself in trouble. She's gotten kicked out of several schools for other things, not for like standing up to Nazis. But she's just got this like really fiery spirit. And then her older sister is very much like, I just want to protect my family. I want to take care of my home and my neighbors. And I don't want to draw attention to myself. I just really want to maintain the status quo. And really, it just parallels their journeys as neither of like their characters can stay the same with the way that things are happening in history and how they respond to the war and what happens to their relationship throughout it. They both end up being part of, I guess this is a spoiler, but I won't give too many. They both end up being part of the resistance in different ways. But they don't know what the other one is doing until the very end. And so that, anyway, it was very sad. It was very well written. I think Kristen Hannah is great. I really enjoyed reading it. I really like her characters. But it's just really scary to see these things written about in a book about World War II, which we all say we don't want to relive or never again, you know, is like what's been drilled into our heads as kids. And then to watch things that our government is doing that looks very similar to how things started out there is pretty disturbing. So great book, heavy subject material. I also read, on a lighter note, I read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid, which was just a fabulous book. I was on a wait list for both these books for a really long time. They've been really popular. And everybody on Libby has been reading them. This book is fiction. It's about this actress, and it's really, the actress is Evelyn Hugo. And she is this Latina actress who really rose into prominence by whitewashing herself in a lot of ways and like toning down the Latina part of herself. Like, a lot of people don't know she's Cuban. And this is just, she is telling a journalist about the relationship with her seven different husbands. The character is loosely based off of Elizabeth Taylor. And so that was just, it was just a really fun
book. Elizabeth, we talked about this, I don't remember what you
Elizabeth
said.
Elizabeth Taylor was not Latina, but okay, like a lot of her like story but is very similar to this character. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, those are the two books I read.
I do know that Rita Hayworth was Latina and was...
So, yes, I should clarify. This character was based on several different actresses. Mm. Elizabeth Taylor, who had seven husbands, and Rita Hayworth, and somebody else who I cannot remember right now. So, yeah.
It's Natalie like a Wood, everyone's favorite Latina from West Side Story.
I don't know. Anyway, that's what I read.
Okay, great. I guess we can move on to the one and only Ivan. So I believe it's my turn to talk about the author bio. Mm-hmm. Catherine Applegate, right? I keep wanting to... We have some friends with the name Appleberry as the last name. I keep wanting to say Appleberry. But yeah, Catherine Applegate. So she's born in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Apparently grew up mostly in Grand Rapids, but as an adult has lived many places, including Italy, and then back in the States, she's lived in Florida, Texas, North Carolina, Illinois, she's living in California right now. I think at some point in her childhood also lived in California. And the reason why I'm saying this is that as a 10-year-old, she had gerbils as a pet. This is something I found in an interview with her. And they were, I guess, male and female gerbils and reproduced. And she had a whole bunch of gerbils to get rid of. And so she sold gerbils. And apparently in the state of California, it's actually illegal to own gerbils, or it was at one point. I don't know. Someone in California can weigh in on the legality of gerbils. But I had that as a note.
So what happened?
She like had a little business where she sold gerbils. As a result, she wanted to become a vet.
Wait, did she get caught? Like, why did it say it was illegal to own gerbils if it didn't tell you?
I need to go back and look at that interview. She was not caught, but that detail was disclosed. So maybe she was like, it's like a black market gerbil situation.
Gotcha.
Or maybe, like I said, she now lives in California. I'm sorry. I made these notes days ago when we thought we could record, and then you're
now they're not fresh in my mind.
But it's also possible that maybe she, living in California, being interviewed, was saying, "I can't own a gerbil now, but as a kid, I had this." Anyway, I don't know. Do your own research, listeners. I'm being very disappointing right now. But as a result, she decided she wanted to be a vet, and she worked for a vet in high school. That didn't really go anywhere. She eventually became an author. I guess her love of animals stuck with her, because one thing I learned, not researching this specifically, but once we picked up One and Only Ivan, I kind of looked around, and Catherine Applegate was a co-author of the Animorphs series that she co-authored with her husband. Her husband's name, she's actually co-authored quite a few things with her husband, whose name is Michael Grant. But the Animorphs, which I've never read, but I remember those iconic covers of like the kids transitioning into, you know, a fish or a monkey or whatever. She's written a ton of things. Like, she's written so many things. Like, you look on like her Wikipedia, and she has like all of these series, including Animorphs. There's like Animorphs spinoff series, but there's also other series that aren't Animorphs that I've never heard of. And her husband, a lot of them, she's co-writing with him. It's just very widely published, and sometimes under different names too. There was a subsection of her Wikipedia page that were pseudonyms, and some of these pseudonyms were used for different writing projects. So like she has a series of novels called Girl Talk that she published under the name L.E. Blair. She, with her husband, wrote some Harlequin romance novels under the name of Catherine Kendall. She did tie-in novels to like Disney's Aladdin under the name A.R. Plum. She's also gone under Beth Kincaid, Pat Pilari, Nicholas Stevens. Anyway, if it weren't enough for her to have published all these things under her real name, she's also published things under other people's names as well. Her life story doesn't have a lot that I found besides that gerbil story. She seems to have found a lot of success as an author, and has been basically living that life for, you know, quite some time now. It is interesting to note, though, that the One and Only Ivan did eventually become a series, but like at the time she published it, she published it as a standalone book based on some real life incidents that we may talk about a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of late career for her. Like, you know, this was well after Animorphs. Like, this was well after, you know, a lot of these other things. And she got a lot of acclaim with that,
mm-hmm.
Including a movie adaptation that I've not seen. I guess it's not entirely rare for someone to get all this acclaim like late in their career. And maybe Animorphs is acclaim too. I never perceived it as such as a kid. But
I felt like it was everywhere. Every book fair, they were all
it was, the but place. There's like other things that were everywhere too that people like, they weren't winning awards necessarily, but maybe they were. I don't know. All I have to say is like, you know, good for her. Like, you know, being able to get Newbery Medal acclaim, Rebecca's mad because I'm stuttering
I'm
over my
mad.
Words.
You're just going slower than normal.
Good for her. I'm out of practice.
I know.
We keep podcasting once every like a month and a half.
You want me to talk about this book?
Yes. Tell us about The One and Only Ivan.
Okay. So The One and Only Ivan is a story about a silverback gorilla named Ivan, who is at the Exit 8 Big Top Mall, which is beside a video arcade. And basically he's part of this menagerie, the small interstate zoo. next to, like, in a strip mall. And some of the people that are with, some of the animals that are with them are Stella, who's an elephant, Bob, who's a stray dog, and then later on, a baby elephant, Ruby, also comes to Big Top Mall and is with them. And so, Ivan has been tallying, this whole book is told through his perspective, small little vignettes that he gives us along the way. He's been tallying how many days he's been at the Big Top Mall, and he's up to 9,876 days that he's lived in captivity. He is generally content with his life. He watches television. He eats bananas. He makes artwork. Like, they give him paints and things and, like, crayons and markers, and he makes artwork, and then they sell them in the gift shop. So Stella, however, is an older elephant. She has a chronic injury in a leg because she has been in a circus where they, like, I can't remember, they kept her, like, chained up. But didn't she have some kind of injury from a performance that she did? Do you remember?
I don't exactly remember. I mean, the circus, like many circuses do, their animals, like, abused. Abused her, and she has, like, lingering injuries from that.
Yeah, and she still performs in the Big Top Mall. But unlike Ivan, Stella has a long memory, so she can remember living in other places, like the circus where she taught many of her tricks. She wanted to live in a zoo, and she believes that good zoos are the ways that humans make amends. So when Ruby, a baby elephant, is brought to the Big Top Mall, that changes everything for everyone. For Stella, this leaves her very grieved that Ruby is now going to live this life of captivity that she has lived. So she cares for Ruby. She becomes very attached to Ruby. And then Stella's injury that she's had forever gets infected. The owner of this menagerie at Big Top Mall, Mac is his name, he does not get her the care that she needs, and she gets very sick. Right before she dies, she asks Ivan to take care of Ruby and find her a better place. And so Ivan promises that he will do this, even though he has no idea how he will. And then after Stella dies, he begins to remember his own life before the Big Top Mall. He remembers being separated from his family. He remembers, is it his sister, is Tag?
Yes.
And then he has a plush elephant that he calls Not Tag, that looks, not elephant, my gosh.
It's like a real,
I'm also out of practice.
We're struggling. Plush, we have read the, I promise everybody, we have read this book. We have done our research.
I really apologize. We want to do this book justice because it's a great book. Anyway, so he concocts this big plan to make this giant piece of artwork. The custodian is George. George is a great guy. And he has a daughter, Julia, who loves all the animals. She's very much a character who's in tune with the animals, what they need and what they want, and really pays attention to them and is able to listen to them in different ways than the adults around her life. So Julia begins to notice. She gives Ivan some fingerprints. Some finger paints, and she begins to notice his artwork. She works with her dad, George, to put all of it together and realizes that he's made this really large picture with the word home, and he's drawn the, like, one of the symbols of the zoo on that. George and Julia work together to put these pieces of artwork on a big billboard, which then sparks protest about the treatment of these animals. Investigators come in. Big Top Mall is eventually closed down. And then Ivan, Ruby, and the other animals are taken away to a zoo where Ivan becomes acquainted with other silverbacks like him. That is, like, a big overview of the plot. Is there anything that you would add?
Did you look about the real Ivan? Because this is based on a real event.
I did, but it's not as fresh in my memory if you want to share about that.
So, the real Ivan lived in a strip mall that apparently had animal cages. I don't know. Rebecca and I talked about, like, we had trouble picturing, like, what is a mall with a zoo in it look like? Mm-hmm. But, like, this is apparently a strip mall and then one of the little places in the strip mall had animals. But anyway, he lived in this place in Tacoma, Washington for 27 years. And there was an article, like maybe a New York Times article or something that attracted attention to this mall. And there were protests and stuff like that. And as a result, he was eventually relocated to the Atlanta Zoo.
And there was a documentary that was made.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, is the documentary. but anyway, he died in 2012, right around the time this book was published. So, you know, sadly, he did not get to see all the acclaim that mm-hmm. his life story got.
Mm-hmm. But he lived, did you say he lived in the zoo for until, so he was in the Atlanta Zoo. Yeah. Is where he was adopted in 1994.
Right.
And so after living in captivity for 27 years.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I really had about him. What do you like about this book, Rebecca?
Hang on, I want to tell people the documentary that we were talking about that really drew a lot of attention to the real life Ivan was called The Urban Gorilla. And it was aired by National Geographic Explorer in 1991, if anyone's interested in that. Anyway, what did I like about this book? I loved Stella. She was just the most loving, mothering character in the book.
R.I.P. Stella.
Really sad when she died. And I just thought it was really clever to like note that she was an elephant, so she had long-term memory, that she uses that. In such a creative way to help the other animals to connect with, like, this is not all that's out there, and it's actually not good for us what's happening. And it's not good for a baby to be brought into this and then made to perform. So I really love Stella. I thought it was interesting that she sees good zoos as humans' means of making amends, whereas now there's a lot of conversation about even Are zoos even ethical?
Well, specifically for elephants, like a lot of zoos have, including our local zoo, have kind of sunsetted their elephant programs because of, it being viewed as cruel to keep elephants in captivity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like all of our elephants were moved to Elephant Sanctuary that's in Hohenwald, Tennessee. So I just thought that was interesting. I guess it's true for Ivan, like he wouldn't have been able to survive in the wild after living for so long in captivity.
Right.
But just the idea of, like, how do we as humans, like, take good care of animals, especially when we've done wrong. And so I thought that was a really interesting perspective. I really enjoyed reading the story through Ivan's perspective. I thought the way it breaks down with the little vignettes that he gives you, it's, like, really sweet and concise, but you still get to see the whole story. And I just enjoyed the community of the animals and Julia being that figure who can see and understand their needs where, I just think that's really important in a children's novel to have, like, a child being the one that sees and pays attention to the things that the adults can't because they either have to make money or, for her dad, like, he was really nervous to do anything against Mac because his job was at stake and he actually did get fired in the end.
It's like the second book in a row.
For what they did.
It's the second book in a row where a major character dies. I guess third book in a row if we count Missing May. But it's also the second book in a row in which someone stands up to their boss and the boss just fires them.
Yeah. But you don't get to see a ton of Julia. And then she ends up, Bob, the stray dog that lives at Big Top Mall, he ends up becoming her pet at the end. And he gets to come and see Ivan at the zoo. And Julia's the one that tells Ivan. He's very confused about where he is. He doesn't realize he's in a zoo. When he finally, like, acclimates with the other silverbacks. But Julia comes to see him and is like, no, you're in a zoo, and Ruby's here too, and Bob's my pet. And it was just a really sweet, sweet ending, I felt like. So that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I was reading, and you're like midway through the book, and Stella dies, and you're like, man, this book's going to be such a bummer.
Yeah.
And, I have nothing against bummer books, but I was glad to see an actual, like, a happy ending.
I think if that hadn't have happened, that they would have just stayed there forever because, it's really the cruelty of, like, her injury in her past life, but also, like, the fact that the owner of Big Top Mall, who loves Ivan and actually took care of him as a baby, like as his kid, until he got too rambunctious in the house and had to be put in the mall. Like a guy that doesn't start out as a villain, but it's like his oversight that leads to her death. And I feel like that was really the moment where everyone realized something's got to change.
Well, and it's like, you know, the mall is having financial troubles, and right. there's this, you know, constant tension with Mac where like the mall has to turn a profit, right? You know, like the mall has to stay financially solvent, and like whatever his intentions, like since that ultimately has to be his goal to keep the mall open, financially, like he's not going, that's going to incentivize him not to spend money on like the care of the animals. It's going to incentivize him to like exploit like Ivan's like, artwork and stuff, you know, and like that's kind of what Mac has become, is this person who is just driven by money all the time. And I mean, like, I think there's like, you know, you could say like a subtle critique of like capitalism in that, you know, if you have a system where profit is the engine that leads toward like cruelty and neglect in the interest of money. But I think also it, you know, like you said, it doesn't make him exactly a villain, but it motivates Ivan to have agency. Because I think that's like the big arc in the second half is like, you know, Ivan has become complacent and he like chooses not to remember. Like he's like blocked out the memories of like his past. And so like the second half is almost like his like awakening in a sense. And like his understanding that like art can communicate something. Cause like for, you know, at the beginning of the book, he uses art, like he just like smashes his hand on pages or whatever. And then he realizes that art can represent things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of coincides with his awakening about like his situation, that his situation is not okay. And I think that that's, I don't know, like it's, the book isn't like super heavy handed about it, but it is like a kind of meaningful, like, I mean, that is like a lot of people's like, trajectory is that like they slowly wake up to the fact that like the world around them isn't how it should be, or they're being treated in ways that they shouldn't be, and the first like what you gravitate toward is how to express that, and what, you know, how do you show like that your situation is not how you want it to be, and your situation is unjust, and like the fact that he does that through art, like I think is really cool and interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I also liked all the other things that you mentioned mm-hmm. as well. Was there anything you didn't like?
I mean, this is really minor. I couldn't think of anything in particular that I disliked. I felt like it was kind of slow at the beginning. It just took me a little while to get into it. But that's really the only thing that I remember feeling like I disliked.
Yeah, it is. I agree. It takes a while to get going. I think the structure of it helps though, because mm-hmm. it's written in these really short chapters, like sometimes just like a page at a time or something like that, and so for me, like, there, it does take a while for you to figure out like what am I supposed to be latching onto with this story. But also at the beginning, when it's just kind of like establishing what's happening, the chapters are so short that it kind of, for me, it went by a little quicker mm-hmm. than it might have otherwise. I don't know if there's anything I didn't like about this book. I don't know. I thought this was really good. Mm-hmm. I don't have any big complaints.
Well, good. Yeah. I think we both give it two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. One only, Ivan. This is,
we've not seen the movie. The movie, was going to have a like theatrical release, but then COVID happened, and I think that Disney just released it on Disney Plus, but they did make this movie.
And I will also mention that this book has sequels long after the fact, really. I think it was like 8 or 10 years before she wrote the next one, but there's The One and Only Bob, and then The One and Only Ruby. And then just last year, in 2024, The One and Only Family, which I guess is like a prequel about like his life in Africa before he was captured. I would be curious what those books are like. Like, to me, this feels like a pretty definitive ending you know, I don't know what the rest of those books
I just imagine look like. It's following their individual stories, like Bob and Ruby, and I don't know who the family is.
But the family, I think, is his African family.
Oh, okay.
Like, from before his captivity.
I'd be interested in all that.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably good. Maybe I should check out Animorphs.
One thing I will say about this book that I just remembered is that they mention at the end of the book, like, pretty much when they get to the zoo, the book is over. But there are some, like, vignettes when Ivan is, like, realizing there are other gorillas around and figuring out how to interact with them. And one of the females that he's attracted to, let me see if I can find her name really quick, was based off of a real female gorilla that was at the Atlanta Zoo. That, okay. Hang on. Sorry, guys. This is Kenyani. They're real gorillas. But what Ivan was never actually able to, like, really fully integrate himself with them. Like, he was still kind of, like, not knowing how to interact. But apparently he was very flirtatious, but never...
Oh, Ivan,
never
you,
did the
you
deed.
Rascal.
He never did the deed. Man. But anyway, he, like, Kenyani was a real gorilla that was also at the Atlanta Zoo. So I just want to share that little tidbit.
It is kind of interesting to imagine, because a lot of the book... involves like Ivan having come up with his own like terminology and like kind of like understanding of the world because he's been isolated this whole time and he hasn't had no one really to teach him except like Mac and like it is interesting to think about like what would that be like socially for a gorilla. It kind of reminds me of the stories of kids raised by wolves or whatever, and they have, you know, really hard time socializing, you know, like in the Jungle Book, like in the Rudyard Kipling book, like Mowgli, you know, is raised by wolves and then he tries to go back to human society and can't cut it because it's like makes no sense to him, and then he goes back to the jungle.
It really does make profound statements about what we are entertained by as humans and what is justified by that, and like really the impact of our entertainment, what it affects other animals' lives. I mean, like, we know these things, but I think she portrays all of those questions in a really engaging way for kids to think about, and to just make you think about, like, Ivan's relationship with Mac, you know? Like, Mac was like a father to him in the beginning, and then I don't feel like she really deals with this a lot about does his opinion change about Matt, because he's just kind of like telling us the story. But I wonder what that was like for him to leave Mac too and to go be with these other gorillas. I don't know. Just there's like big questions there and pieces that I think are better left undone because you can like use your imagination and talk about them. But anyway, I just thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I agree. And one that doesn't softball the ethical issues that it raises either. Right. So thumbs up. Well, that brings us to the end of this podcast. I said this at the end of the last podcast, but hopefully it's not as long. We do still have to record. I'm not sure if we're going to publish this or the other episode that I'm about to mention first, but we also need to record our year-end thoughts and reflections about what we've read, like we did last year. At this point, it's in February, so
yeah,
it's going to be quite a reflection. But we have that, and then the next book that we're reading is the 2023 winner. So we're in the 2020s again. The 2023 winner is by Dave Eggers, and it's called The Eyes and the Impossible. No idea what it's about. I've only read Dave Eggers' adult work. So I don't know what he's like as a children's author. I'm going to guess it's not going to be like a heartbreaking work of staggering genius.
And I've never read any of his stuff, so this will be my first.
You do like, you know he wrote the screenplay for Where the Wild Things Are, the movie, though, right?
I think you told me that, but I had forgot it. So
maybe it'll be more like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, you got any more thoughts, Rebecca?
I just want to say, like, this is kind of sentimental, but I think it's so important that we take extra good care of ourselves and the people around us right now, and I just am really grateful for good stories in the midst of that. That I do think really help us question what that looks like, to take care of ourselves and to take care of the earth and to take care of animals and our neighbors and everyone. And I just, that's really hard work and it's really overwhelming, especially in like a season like this one. And I'm just grateful for good stories that bring joy and good questions in the midst of that. So take care of yourselves and keep reading is what I want to say.
And my last words are, as the character of Max shows us, even a person with good intentions when collaborating with an evil system will eventually end up just being evil. So that probably doesn't apply to anyone in real life, but it's a nice, like, interesting philosophical concept that this book talked about. Anyway, that's all I got.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks. See you next time.